compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, 1 hour down, two to go. My number is 888-914-9149. So, Cyrus, I'm losing track of all the freebies that are being given out if you go get your vaccine, your COVID vaccine. So we know Krispy Kreme
beer.
Has got the free donuts.
We got Budweiser.
Budweiser. Okay. Have you taken advantage of that?
No. Nope. I have not.
Okay. Well, there's another option for you.
There's more. There's more than that. Oh, you can win. You can win $5 million from Kroger's.
True.
And there is more. I can't keep track.
I can't either. But so we've got the free donuts, the free beer,
all these healthy incentives.
Yeah, yeah. Then next, we better start working on that vaccine for obesity. Vaccine for oh gosh. Well, in any case, here's another one, and I'm just putting this out there. But Washington State residents of legal age can now get a free joint, a marijuana joint, at a licensed marijuana store if they receive an on-site coronavirus vaccine. So you can go into the vaccine parlor. Actually, no, it's not a vaccine parlor. It's a pot store. You go in, you get your vaccine, and they give you a joint. And I guess you can light up while you're there. I don't know why I feel like I'm telling you this, Cyrus, like you personally need to know this.
Why are you talking to me?
And you're not a pothead.
No. Yeah,
no,
I don't know why
you're not a pothead
talking to me about this.
And if Father Rocky is listening... Father Rocky,
I don't think he's interested in getting a free joint.
I guarantee he's not. I guarantee he's not. But here's the funnier bit. Okay, the program is called Joints for Jabs.
Oh man,
Joints for Jabs. It's a program that was approved by the State Liquor and Cannabis Board as a way to entice residents to get vaccinated. The initiative applies to anyone over 21. In exchange for getting a shot at an on-site clinic, licensed adult use weed shops will dish out a free pre-rolled joint. This whole thing is so ridiculous.
We live in Looney Tunes.
It's clown world.
We
live in clown world. Breweries, wineries, and restaurants can offer free drinks in exchange for proof of vaccination. Free sports tickets, prize money up to $1 million being offered. And now,
I saw a concert was being held. It's $14 for proof of vaccination.
Okay.
Vaccination, or $1,000 with no proof.
Or what about the place that goes in reverse, that if you wear a mask, they charge you $5 more?
That's right, yeah.
And if you brag about your vaccine, they add another surcharge to it? Goes in both directions.
Yeah, why?
So
let's just find some middle ground here.
So all the Oregoners are going to be going north across the border into Washington to get vaccinated so they can get their free joint.
It's going to be a mass,
what do you say?
Exodus.
I don't know. Let's continue. Let's go to Gloria in Union City, California. Hi, Gloria. Good morning. Let's see. Yeah.
Hi, I'm sorry, Patrick. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Cyrus. Good morning, Gloria. Welcome.
I need an advice. I really admire your show. My daughter has been baptized and confirmed, and she has four little kids. Mm-hmm. And I can't convince her to have them baptized. Do you have any idea on how to convince her in a way that you won't end up in an argument or something?
Yeah. She's not going to Mass now. Is that right? She's not practicing?
No, she's not. She's not a churchgoer anymore. I raised them as a churchgoer. Both my son and her. And my son does, though, but this one, I can't seem to, I don't know why she's against the Catholic faith. She's a granddaughter of a priest who got out of priesthood, and everybody in the family is Catholic because we're from the Philippines. You know how it is in the Philippines, over 90% Catholic, and... Mm-hmm.
So is she practicing any religion at all, or has she just become purely secular, Gloria?
Well, she tells me that she brought them into this place that that teaches kids so that they teach kids in the level of the, you know, the mentality of the kids. so that they
is
can
it a religious organization?
Yeah, it's supposed to be Christian now. It's not a Catholic, but it's supposed to be a Christian organization.
This is probably the source of this problem, and that is that if she's buying into their ideology, and almost certainly their ideology is that you don't baptize children because they're not old enough to repent. I'm guessing here, but I wouldn't be surprised if they hold the belief that only adults, or at least children who are old enough to make, you know, to make a conscious decision for Jesus, should be baptized because they don't believe in what baptism actually does. So I'm guessing that's probably the root of the problem. And as long as she's going to that church or has the kids in that environment, not only is she being, I guess you might say, indoctrinated with that view, but the kids are as well, it sounds like. So if I were you, what I would do is whenever you can, without nagging her, just remind her that her Catholic faith has answers to those kinds of objections. And if she wants to know why baptism is important, it could be as simple, Gloria, for example, as going to the Catholic Answers website, catholic.com, and go to their tract section. They have tracts, maybe 120 of them by now. I wrote a number of them when I was actually working at Catholic Answers many years ago. But they have many, many more now, and they have one on infant baptism. They have one on the importance of baptism, and these are all Bible-based. So if you were to get a couple of these tracts, you can print them out for free. They're in PDF format. Print it out and give it to her. And just say, here's the Catholic reason from the Bible why you should get your kids baptized. Maybe she'd read that. She just might read that. Maybe if you think she would listen to a video, I would suggest letting her watch Dr. Scott Hahn's one-hour presentation on how he became Catholic after being very anti-Catholic as a Protestant minister. That's available on YouTube, and she might be willing to listen to that. So those are some practical suggestions you could use, but my advice would be try to do it in a way that doesn't come across as nagging. And maybe little by little, including your prayers for her, she will thaw out and maybe she will return not only to a practice of her faith, but also get those kids baptized. I understand why, as a grandmother, you're so anxious to see the children baptized, and that's good of you. But I would say little by little, step by step, just keep gently helping her, giving her some of these things. And in due time, God willing, I think she will come back. God willing, keep praying. Thank you. Let's go now to, where are we going? Michael in Bakersfield, California. Welcome to the program.
Yes, Patrick. I'm Irish, and my ancestry says that in the United States there were, we are hiring. Irish need not apply.
Mm-hmm.
And with all this CRT stuff going on, I can see several of my Irish relatives really getting more and more and more upset. It's really interesting how their arguments apply to the Irish, and yet the Irish are now an approach avoidance complex kind of thing with we're racist and we're victims of racism. Really very interesting, and I thank you for your exposing all of that.
Oh, you're most welcome. I, too, have some Irish in me on my mother's side. So I remember seeing the pictures. I mean, I never saw it with my own eyes, but I saw pictures of signs in on buildings or in store windows saying what you just said, Irish need not apply. Now, in the case of the anti-Irish backlash among many Americans in this country back at a time when it was considered legitimate to hold those views, it had more to do with the fact that most of the Irish coming over were Catholic. And so the sort of nativism and the WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant mindset, was very negative toward Catholics and was for many centuries. So that had a lot to do with it, at least from what I've read and what I've heard from people. It wasn't so much their race, because they looked indistinguishable from Americans who were white. You couldn't really tell them apart. But as soon as you heard the Irish accent, you thought, okay, he's a mackerel snapper, he's a Catholic, and we don't want those people here.
Exactly.
So it was kind of a double persecution against the Irish.
Very definitely so, but I thought I'd comment.
I'm glad you did, Michael.
Thank you.
Nice to chat with you. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. 9149. Let's get over to San Diego and speak to Vivian. Good morning, Vivian.
Good morning. What is a grandmother or a mother or a father to do when their school district, as the San Diego Public School District has mm-hmm. done, in adopting the critical race theory as a part of their curriculum?
You homeschool your kids, or you send them to a good Catholic school where that nonsense is not taking hold. You got to protect your kids from this ideology. It's destructive. It is hateful. It's racist. And the kids are being conditioned
to accept it. There are no Catholic schools
it.
With openings because the Catholics have all pulled their kids already.
Then homeschool.
There are no openings in Catholic schools.
Yeah, I heard you. Homeschool then.
That was my thought.
I'm not saying it
Thank
to be...
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm not saying... You're welcome, Vivian. I'm not saying it to be provocative, but if all of your options are eliminated, if the Catholic schools are not available because there's no opening, fair enough. If the public schools are teaching critical race theory to the kids, which they are, then homeschool, is, to my mind, is the only option you really have. And you may say, yeah, but that doesn't work for our family. And I understand it's a sacrifice. But would you go into, and I'm not speaking to Vivian, thank you for your call, Vivian, just speaking generally, rhetorically here. If your kids were in a burning building, I'm pretty sure you'd run into the burning building to get them out, right? It'd be some risk to yourself, but you would do it because you love your children. Well, which is worse, running into a burning building to get your kids out or homeschooling, if that's what it comes to? And maybe the family budget takes a hit. You know, that's not the end of the world. It's not great. It's not fun. But it's the sacrifice you would make to take care of your kids. Because after all, let's remember, parents, think about this. Eventually, when you have your exit interview, this is true for everybody, but in particular as a parent, when you have your exit interview and you're standing before God being judged, this is going to come up. This will be on the checklist of items to go over in your exit interview. What did you do to protect your children and to help them get to heaven? And what about all these things that you didn't do? Why didn't you do these things? You could have done them. Why didn't you do them? I am convinced that that kind of question is going to come up when the exit interview happens. And I honestly, I don't want to have to, you know, I want to be able to say, Lord, I tried my best. I tried the best I could with what I had available to me. That's what I would like to be able to say. So I know that you feel the same way I do. You want to do the right thing by your children. So I understand that homeschooling is not for everybody, but sometimes if you're in a situation and it's the only alternative you have, it's the only thing you've got, it's the only thing you can turn to, well then, give it a try. And you might be surprised. In fact, I'm pretty confident that later on down the road, your kids are going to thank you. I remember one time, one of my sons, who's now an adult and he's got children of his own and he's very successful and making his way in the world. He took me aside once, not that long ago, as a matter of fact. He said, Dad, I just want to thank you. He said, I never really thanked you. I said, what for? And he said, because you used to be really hard on me and you used to insist that I get a job and that I earn money and he gave me a list of like three or four things that I didn't think I was that hard on him at the time. And I still don't, looking back on it, I don't feel like it was really that I was excessively hard on him. But for him, as a 14, 15, 16-year-old, he thought at the time that I was being really hard on him by demanding of him performance, by demanding that he get a job and earn his money and the stuff that he wanted to buy on the side that he had to do that. You want to get a driver's license? Fine. You have to pay for your driving school. That, by the way, is something we've done with all of our kids. You know, you want to get your learner's permit? Great. You want to get your driver's license? Great. Happy to help you do that. But you've got to go to driving school and driving school costs money and I'm not going to pay for that for you. If that's something you want, you're going to have to get a job and save up your money and pay for driving school to the tune of like $250, $300, whatever it was at the time. You know, it's not insignificant, but Nancy and I always insisted that the kids pay their own way for things like that. So anyway, my son, he said, you know, I really look back on it now and I said, you really did me a favor because you forced me to stand on my own two feet and to do something that I wasn't inclined to do because I was lazy or whatever. And I just want to thank you. And that meant the world to me. Still does. I still think about that. And I know the same will be true for you and your children. Even if in the moment they grumble and complain and moan and roll their eyes and all those things that kids tend to do, push past that and keep loving them and keep encouraging them and protect them, quite frankly, in the ways that they need to be protected. You stand between them and the things that are out there that will be harmful to them. We talked about critical race theory on the program the first hour today. We're not doing that topic right now, but if you're interested in the document that I was sharing earlier, it's called, let me pull up the title here, it's called Critical Race Theory Briefing Book by Christopher Rufo, R-U-F-O. His website, by the way, ChristopherRufo.com. But this is an example of where if you've got kids in junior high school, high school, they're already hearing about this. They're already seeing this. This would be a proactive measure that you can undertake to help them understand why this is wrong. You know, not just that it's wrong, but why is it wrong? And how do you respond to it? And what can you say and what can you do that will demonstrate the right way of looking at this, regardless of your skin color? Just putting that out there. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Madison, Wisconsin now. Good morning, Mary. Welcome.
Hi. So I would just like to encourage everybody out there to really just pay attention to their Board of Educations at their districts. Unfortunately, you know, COVID has been a very sad backdrop in which the board have been able to go ahead and pass things. I know that some of the mechanics of our particular board is not all of the members need to be present in order to vote. And, you know, there are some alarming revelations of that nature that people would be very interested in discovering, because it's very interesting how quickly and how swiftly a lot of these ethnic classes and requirements are getting through and are getting passed without it being seen or heard by parents. And most recently, we just got a confirmation in our district that the freshman class is required. It's a requirement to go through their ethnic studies class as of this coming up and coming school year. So I really want to just share those bullet points with everyone.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now, the document that I was sharing earlier, Mary, I have a feeling that that's the kind of thing that would be useful to parents who want to push back against this kind of thing. I just would like to encourage you to get a hold of it yourself and then maybe share it around in your circle so that people have access to that tool, okay?
Yes, thank you.
You're most welcome. Well, thank you. I appreciate your call, and it's good to know that good people are out there doing their best to try to get people's attention. That's what we're doing here on the Relevant Radio Network and right here on the Patrick Madrid Show. Speaking of that, we'll take a break, and we'll be right back right after this.
Don't forget the rice and beans on the plato. I like to eat, homie, yo no estoy flaco. Yeah, I'm chubby, pero I'm still guapo. Uno, dos, tres.
Patrick Madrid is on
Taco Tuesday,
coast to coast on Relevant Radio.
Taco Tuesday's my favorite day. That's the reason why I'm all away. Pero I don't care, homie, let
I forgot it was Taco Tuesday, Cyrus. How can I forget?
Who are you and what have you done with Patrick Madrid?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it is Taco Tuesday. So muchas enchiladas, everybody. Thanks for listening. 888-914-9149. I've got some good news on the Alzheimer's front. This is from Daily Wire. The Food and Drug Administration approved a new drug for Alzheimer's disease Monday of this week, purportedly giving doctors a new but much debated method of directly addressing the Alzheimer's disease process instead of merely treating its symptoms. The drug is called aducanumab. It was approved through the FDA's Accelerated Approval Program, which is reserved for drugs that, quote, fill an unmet medical need based on a surrogate endpoint, but that do not definitively improve patient outcomes. As StatNews notes, this means that while the drug has shown it can eliminate the toxic protein clumps experts believe contribute to dementia, the regulatory agency doesn't know definitively if it actually helps improve cognition in the patients who receive it. So here's a quote from Patrizia Cavazzoni. She's the director. How'd you like the way I said that, Cyrus? That was pretty good Italian accent there. Patrizia Cavazzoni. She's the, Cyrus is just nodding, director of the FDA's Center for Drug Evaluation and Research. And she says, Alzheimer's disease is a devastating illness that can have a profound impact on the lives of people diagnosed with the disease as well as their loved ones. Currently available therapies only treat symptoms of the disease. This treatment option is the first therapy to target and affect the underlying disease process of Alzheimer's. As we have learned from the fight against cancer, the accelerated approval pathway can bring therapies to patients faster while spurring more research and innovation. According to the New York Times, both proponents and critics of the drug, which also goes by the brand name Aduhelm, agree that it substantially reduces levels of amyloid, a protein that clumps into plaques in the brains of Alzheimer's patients and is considered a biomarker in the disease. But in the past, drugs that have reduced the amyloid levels in patients have still failed to improve outcomes in the patients. So, you know, maybe a glimmer of hope there. We certainly hope so. And that article is with all the articles that we are sharing on the program every single day are available by going to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Just look on the lower right side and you'll see the Twitter feed. Now, Cyrus, you and I and everybody else in the world has been hearing about how Jeff Bezos announced that he's going to go aboard the Blue Origin's first crewed space flight because he can, because he owns it. Hey, this is my spacecraft. I'm going with you. And they can't stop him. Would you go, Cyrus, if it wasn't a situation where you had to, you know, go to astronaut school and all the grueling training, if you could just say, I'm going to go, and would you go? Would you go up there with the space people?
Sign me up.
You'd go.
I'd go. Yeah, that sounds like an adventure. Let's do it.
Mars ain't the kind of place to raise your kid, though, Cyrus.
It's cold, I've heard.
It's cold, yeah. Well, anyway, so I don't know if I would go.
No? Would you jump out of an airplane?
No.
No, see, I'd do. I'd
zero
do
hesitation.
I'm getting a little old for it, but I'd still do it.
I would not begin to even think about doing that. No way. Not happening.
Well, Mars, it'd be fun. Be weightless.
No.
Float around.
Nope. Not happening. Never in a million years. Never. No.
All right. So would you rather sit in a barrel of snakes or go to space?
No, I want to go to heaven a different way. That's not the way I want to go to heaven.
Because your heart's given out either way.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. Don't give me those choices because, no, I don't want to do that. So, I mean, I have nothing against it. Although, you know, Jeff Bezos, he's going to be on board the Blue Origin's New Shepard rocket when it launches its first crewed space flight on the 20th of July coming up. You know, in his spare time, when he wasn't running Amazon, he started Blue Origin. This is back in 2000. And he announced on Instagram that he's going to be joined on the flight by his brother, Mark Bezos. He said, ever since I was 5 years old, I've dreamed of traveling to space. On July 20th, I will take that journey with my brother, the greatest adventure with my best friend. Sounds dicey to me. New Shepard, that's a spacecraft, has flown 15 test flights since its first launch in 2015. All of them without crew. The planned flight will take it about 100 kilometers above the ground, marking the edge of space where the six-seater crew capsule will detach. The capsule will float in space for about 3 minutes in microgravity where the crew can unbuckle their seatbelts before coming down to land about 10 minutes after the launch. I mean, they're not going to the moon yet, but they're going to space. And I actually do think that's kind of cool, Cyrus. I like the idea of it, but I just wouldn't do it. If I were, you know, 20 years old and didn't have kids and wasn't married, I would do it, I think.
Well, hopefully he's got his will and testament all up to date, will and last testament, and he's gone to confession.
I have a feeling, I don't know about the confession part, but I have a feeling he's got all the paperwork signed and dotted. You know, this makes me think about something else, Cyrus. I wonder... I would be interested if we could pick people to launch into space and just get a list of some people.
There might be some people that pick you.
I bet there would be. But, you know, I have my list of people I'd like to see sent to Mars as colonists and maybe just stay there, you know, have three hots in a cot and just enjoy it. But enjoy it over there. I don't know. I don't think that I would be successful in getting that off the ground.
I can take a guess at some of these characters, but I'm going to stay quiet.
Yeah, we're going to steer clear of that. That'll be just my own private thoughts. Speaking of private thoughts, they're now made public in the case of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She has come out, I don't know if you saw this, Cyrus, but she has come out critical of Vice President Kamala Harris, who yesterday down in Guatemala, she said, we played the audio of it. She says, if you're thinking about coming up to the United States, don't come up. Don't come here because we're going to turn you back. And now AOC is publicly castigating her.
Do not come.
Yeah.
Do not come.
Yeah, just very simple. And I asked the question earlier, does that make her a racist? Because if, you know, a previous administration had said that, they were immediately branded as racists. But I guess she's not a racist. I still don't know how the rules work on this one, but Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, I don't think has called her a racist, but she's certainly telling her that, you know, this is wrong, you shouldn't say that. I agree with Vice President Harris, in any case, on this point, maybe only this point. Sky News has got another angle to, not that story per se, but kind of a related story about people being punished for their views. A cricketer, a guy who plays pro cricket in England, this is the second time this has happened now, the second player. Ollie Robinson was suspended from international cricket pending an investigation into tweets that he sent in 2012 and 2013, so nearly 10 years ago. And it's happening again. A second England cricketer is being investigated over historical offensive social media posts. They've unearthed a tweet publishing its content but concealing the alleged England cricketer's identity. How would you like to be known as a cricketer, Cyrus, if that were your job description? What does he do? Oh, he's a cricketer. What does that mean? He's a cricketer. Does he raise crickets?
What gets me about this story is he was a child when he wrote this. He's a stupid kid. Kids say dumb things.
This is true. I can attest to that. I've been there and done that. So here's what's going on. A spokesman for the England and Wales Cricket Board says, it's been brought to our attention that an England player has posted historic offensive material on their social media account. We are looking into it and will make a further comment in due course. It comes just hours after bowler Ollie Robinson was suspended from all international cricket pending the outcome of a disciplinary investigation into offensive posts that he sent in 2012 and 2013 as a teenager. He says he's embarrassed and ashamed as he apologized unreservedly for social media messages which were unearthed last Wednesday. Who's doing the unearthing? I mean, just think there's somebody, maybe more than one person, and probably being paid to unearth people's teenage posts online. I mean, that to my mind is disturbing in itself.
Yeah. And cancel culture at large.
And if you had, let's say that you had an errant thought, you had a view or you said something that expressed maybe what you thought or you didn't necessarily think it, but you posted it, and that was 10 years ago. People are not allowed to change. People are not allowed to get better, I guess. People are not allowed to improve. And you are defined by what you may have said 10 years ago or longer. That's not fair. And, you know, it's also antithetical to the message of Jesus, which is you can get better. You can repent of your sins. You can change your life. For God so loved the world that he sent his only son that whoever would believe in it would not perish but have eternal life. John chapter 3, verse 16, right? So this cancel culture, it's wrong on many levels, but it's especially wrong because it goes directly against the gospel of Jesus, which is a gospel of mercy and forgiveness, and you can change and you can be restored and you can recover and all these things that the world says, sorry. You posted that when you were 15 years old and your career as a professional athlete is over because not that you did anything now, but because you did it then, we're going to hold you accountable for it. And that's that. That's the way things work. And that's directly contrary to the message of Jesus. I'm going to go with Jesus on this one, Cyrus. What about you, personally?
Absolutely. And this even goes back to, we talked about this in the first hour with the critical race theory, and it's almost, there's a thread of a total lack of forgiveness in this culture right now. Here's just a little bit of that woman that we played the minute and a half long.
Oh, yeah, the one who's talking about reparations?
Right, here's just a little bit of what she had to say.
The first step to healing is forgiveness. If the first thing that comes out of your mouth is, well, they don't deserve forgiveness, sit down, let me learn you a thing or two. Time heals all wounds, but if you have a wound that hasn't healed, it's probably because you're still picking at it.
Yes. I love that.
Why can't she be president? Why can't people like that be governors and presidents, you know? I would vote for somebody like that.
I love the way she thinks and articulates herself. Just a very, very smart woman.
Yeah. Indeed. And I think you posted that already, right?
I did.
People can see the whole thing.
Yeah, but what a lesson of forgiveness. It's a great way to move on from, I mean, in all aspects of life, not just in cancel culture, critical race theory. If there's something that you're holding on to and you've got a grudge and you're mad about something that happened a long time ago, it's time to forgive and grow from that.
Absolutely. But just, you know, the English cricketing agency or whoever is running that professional sport, they're having none of it. Because if you did something when you were 15 or 16 years old, woe is you, because you're going to have to pay for that now and forever. They're very harsh and very unforgiving. And that's just a reflection of society as a whole. Let's go to Sammy now in Modesto, California. Sammy, thank you for holding. Welcome.
Yes. Can you hear me, Patrick?
I can, yes. Welcome.
Patrick, I was calling because I just wanted to say there was a different kind of racism in here in the States, where you have people from Mexico that they're racist against Mexican Americans born here in the United States. And
who's racist against them? For the people coming from Mexico or who?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do they look down on them?
Yes, they look down on us, the people that are born here.
Is it really racism, though? Now, by the way, I need to put this into the mix, Sammy. I'm half Mexican. On my dad's 100%. So on my dad's side of the family, I'm 100% Hispanic. So I don't have the experience of, you know, relatives coming up from Mexico and looking down on me. But your experience?
It's not the road. In my experience is like work-related issues. I mean, you got them filling up Jack in the Box, fast food restaurants, warehouses. And I just noticed that, you know, because my parents are from Mexico, too. I'm Mexican-American. I was born here, though. But I just noticed that a lot of them are coming here taking jobs. And a lot of my friends even said that they mistreat them.
I want to make sure I'm understanding you. So the Mexican nationals who come into this country and get jobs, you're saying that they look down upon, I'm guessing it's really not racism. I'm assuming it's probably more just resentment, but maybe I'm wrong on that. And that they're resenting or in some other way, they just don't like the Mexicans who were born here and grew up here. Do I have that right? Okay. Why is that? Why do you think they feel that way? I mean, we don't want to paint with a broad brush and say everybody is that way, but to the extent that there are people like that, why do you think they resent people who are Mexican like they are, but they happen to live here, you know, grew up here?
I just feel like once they get here, they change their attitude. Once they get jobs and they got new cars and all that, they change their attitude. I've even noticed a few times I visited Mexico and they, you know, there's some you know, mistreatment there. They kind of, you know, they know you're not from there.
Yeah, by the way you speak.
Sometimes they'll race.
The accent.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I just kind of thought maybe some kind of racism.
This is interesting. Why would it be racism? I'm not arguing with you. I'm just trying to explore this topic. Is it really racism? Are they really against them because of their race? Because they're of the same race. Or is it more a resentment based on something else?
It might be a resentment. Might be a resentment. Mm-hmm. I just thought I seen it as racism because maybe I know it's the same race, but I think it's just because we're a bit different as far as you know, we were born and raised here. We speak English, and mm-hmm. and they're just coming in. And I don't know. It's just been a lot of it going on in the past 10 years that I've noticed. Mm-hmm. I've lost jobs because of it.
I'm sorry to hear that.
You're right. It might be a resentment. I guess I kind of see this. They see us as a different race for some reason. You know, like we're different. That's why I kind of called it a racism. Because you know, why they have that resentment towards us? I have no idea. Because like I said, my mom and dad were born in Mexico.
Right.
But I wasn't.
Well, what a shame! What a crying shame that is. It doesn't have to be like this.
Exactly,
and I guess. Exactly. I'll just put it this way, Sammy. I think you and I and all the people listening right now, we're the solution to this problem. It can't be imposed top down. The government's never going to be able to say, guys, you got to do this, you got to do that. It has to come from the heart. And if you and I see ourselves as part of the solution, that means that, you know, it's very person specific and you have a role to play, as I do and all of us do, to change people's hearts one at a time. And someone might say, "Yeah, well, you'll never succeed if you're just doing it one at a time." Well, that's all I'm called to do right now. You know, we can't force people to do the right thing, but we can encourage them and give them a good example. Thank you, Sammy. I hope this problem is not a big deal for you anymore, but I'm sorry to hear you went through that. 888-914-9149. Break time. We'll come back with more of your phone calls. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. And the Relevant Radio app. And I've got a defund the police update that's going to make your head spin. Will you hear this? I'll tell you that right after this quick timeout. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
This is a catchy tune, Cyrus. What's this one called? I'm not familiar with this one.
This is, I just labeled it Taco Tuesday
Taco
fun
Tuesday music.
Yep,
well, it fits the bill. Did you see that video montage of people with birthday cakes tripping and falling that I put
yes,
on Twitter?
Thank you for posting that.
That is so funny.
Nothing like laughing at other people's misfortunes. As long as they don't get hurt, it's funny.
It is very funny. It's a montage of maybe six or so people just with
the guy walking into the pool.
Yeah, and he's bringing some people with him.
Yeah, and a birthday cake.
Yeah, it is very funny. My caption was, "This takes the cake." It's the only thing I could think of to caption this. But if you want a quick chuckle, you want to have a little bright spot in your morning, check that out. It's on my Twitter feed. And I'll just retweet that so it's up toward the top when you go there. 888-914. Oh, there's also a picture of me and my little sister when this is from the 60s. I was probably, it was pre-mustache era, Cyrus. Probably 1967, if I had to guess. The year that Sergeant Pepper came out. 888-914-9149. I want to share with you this update about defund the police. And then we'll go to the phone calls. This is from PJ Media. It was about a year ago at the same time that many American cities descended into a madness that was frustrating, heartbreaking, and quite surreal. The common thread among all these cities is they have all been in the thrall of left-wing people for a very long time. When violence erupts like it did last summer, having a bunch of rabid ideologues in charge, no matter what side they're on, is never the answer. The room is in need of some adults once chaos waltzes in. The surreal part, of course, was in here referring to Democrats in Congress, how they reacted to the unrest. Rather than side with law and order, they fully embraced the Marxist view of Black Lives Matter movement. To be sure, they were almost all the way to a full embrace prior to last summer, but they hadn't gone in for what he's calling the deep hug yet. The American mainstream media immediately got to work on one of those ambitious propaganda initiatives promoting this, and people were repeatedly assured that protesters were mostly peaceful by reporters who were passing along the insurances while the camera and standing in front of burning buildings. There are times, the article writer says, and I truly believe that the coastal bubble media elites think that no one in flyover country has cable or even the internet. So at the peak of all this, he goes on to describe how the defund the media, defund the police department's movement picked up. And now it's beginning to come back. The chickens are coming back to roost, and the crime rates are through the roof in many of these cities. Incredible, enormous increases in violent crime. And so the former defund the police movement is now starting to backtrack. And there's evidence of that in some of the same places where they were originally saying we got to defund the police. And now they realize we need the police more than we realized we did. So that's kind of coming back full circle. We'll see how fast it takes place. But I thought you might find that interesting. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Las Vegas to talk to Anita. Good morning, Anita. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to test your memory. I don't know if you're a Star Trekkie or not.
I'm not. I mean, I liked it for what it was worth. I enjoyed watching it on TV. I think Cyrus may be ahead of me when it comes to knowledge of Star Trek. So maybe both of us can try to answer your question.
He will remember. Yes, then he will remember this, I think. There was an episode on Star Trek where, of course, they couldn't, whatever planet they went to, they couldn't disturb the organization as it was.
Okay. Right. The Prime Directive.
When they got there on this one, can you hear me?
Yeah.
One
it's
particular
called the
planet.
Prime Directive. Go ahead.
Prime Directive. Thank you. Mm-hmm. The organization there, if everyone was chipped or monitored, and if they even thought a negative thing or something that was disposed to something to hurt someone else, they would immediately get zapped.
Mm. See, remember was that the that Borg? One? Was it the Borg where they're flying around in a cube-shaped spaceship and they all have the same mind?
Nope, it wasn't. Oh, okay. No, the Borg was you will comply. That was the Borg. will comply. It's futile to not comply. This was a planet they went on. Everyone was monitored. And if the citizenry even thought something negative, they were zapped.
Interesting.
Yes. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I'm blanking. I don't know. Cyrus, any thoughts on this one?
Is this original Star Trek or Next Generation?
No.
It was Kirk.
It's Kirk.
Captain Kirk. So original.
Okay. I'm drawing a blank too. I can't believe it.
Ah, you're kidding. Oh my god. Well, the thing that makes me alert, is that sometimes science fiction will resolve into reality. And it seems we can be going in that direction.
I see what you mean. Okay. Yeah.
And I don't remember the name of the episode, but it was just fascinating. I think Spock tripped over a garden or something, or someone tripped over
that's
a garden.
That's Next Generation, yes. Will Wheaton, Wes, tripped over, and so they were going to kill him because he accidentally broke the garden. Patrick's
I knew
so
Cyrus
bored.
Would know this.
Patrick's so bored already.
I just enjoy watching.
Glossing over.
Cyrus lit up like a Christmas tree when he realized that he had the information. So he loves this stuff.
Great.
There's an old Star Trek with Kirk. There is one with Kirk.
Wait a minute. Did you say Star Trek?
There's
it sounded
Trek.
Like you said Star Trek.
Trek.
Yeah, it's Trek. Okay.
Trek.
I'm just checking. Go ahead, Cyrus.
No, I'm done. All right. There's an old one, the original Star Trek, where everyone on this planet is both white and black. So it's half of their face is the left side is white, the right side's black, and they hate everyone that has a black face on the right and a white face on the left. And that's an interesting and Kirk and Spock are like, you all are the same species.
Yeah.
And they're fighting. They're like, no.
I wonder what message they were trying to send with that episode.
Very subtle.
Yeah. Well, Anita, thank you. We appreciate the Star Trek break. I'll leave you with this, Anita. Do you remember, did you watch any of The Twilight Zone when it was hot?
I watched part of it, yeah. Yes, part
right.
of it. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you have a chance, check this one out. It was called It's a Good Life. And this was, I forget when it came out, but I just looked it up. It's in season 3, episode 8. And it stars Billy Mumy. He's the kid. He's Will Robinson on the TV show Lost in Space. Anyway, so it's a fascinating and startling kind of story, as many of them were. He's this little kid. He's like, you know, 7, 8 years old. And all the adults around him are controlled by the fact that he can wish them into the cornfield if he gets mad at them. So everything is, oh, that's really good. You did a good thing, Billy. Oh, Billy, that's really good. So even if he kills an animal or if he does something terrible, they have to placate him by telling him, oh, that's really good. You did a good thing. And these adults, they're trapped. And they realize that they can't do anything to get out of this nightmare world because the kid will wish them into the cornfield. And that's, you know, some nightmare place in itself. So if you get a chance, see that one. It does kind of tie in. Yeah, kind of like that. Thanks, Anita. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that one. Again, it's called It's a Good Life. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Looking at the clock. Yeah, we still have some time here. I want to get to a few other things. Cyrus, who's buried in Grant's tomb? Do you know?
Grant?
Yeah. Good. Okay, you got one down.
Oh, there's more?
Well, yeah. So who's buried in Grant's tomb? That's one.
I've never been there.
Okay. What are the measurements of a 2x4?
Two by four? Actually, I know that that's not true. I know that a two.
Oh, I thought I would get you.
Because I've lived in an old house where it actually was 2x4, and then I moved into a newer house where it certainly was not true 2x4. So I've seen the difference.
Okay. Well, I thought I would be able to catch you on this one. It's like, you know, calling up and saying, what time is midnight mass on Christmas Eve?
11?
Yeah, something like that. Well, Popular Science, they have an interesting article that a 2x4 is not actually 2x4 and why we call it a 2x4. So it's not 2 inches by 4 inches. It turns out it's 1.5 inches by 3.5 inches, but it's not so easy to say that. They say the same is true for most other woodcuts that are systematically smaller than their names would suggest. Here's why. 2x4 is a colloquialism, says Mark Stevens, the vice president of Woodworkers Source, an Arizona-based company. The phrase 2x4 rolls off your tongue a lot easier than the truth, which is 1.5 by 3.5. But the origins of 2x4 are more complicated. To create a beam or a plank of wood, one must start by chopping down a tree. You cut the tree up in chunks that are called cants, C-A-N-T-S, according to Stevens. A tree is round, but saws cut straight. A cant is the biggest piece you can get out of a log. These cants, just moments ago, part of a living tree, are moist, and the moist wood is called green lumber. It's prone to bending and warping. It's also likely full of bugs. So lumber producers season their wood. A typical plank is air-dried on site, cut up into boards, and then dried again. Sometimes the material is run through a wood kiln. Softwoods like pine, which is common for beams and planks, are baked below 240 degrees. The drying effect isn't permanent. The wood is hydroscopic, so it adjusts its internal moisture to match the external moisture of its environment. But, Stephen says, drying gets a lot of those problems out of the way. By speeding up the process, manufacturers cut down the time it takes to turn a tree into a plank. What's more, by accelerating a piece of wood's natural warping process, the lumber industry can deal with any inconsistencies before it gets to you, the consumer. Now, here's where we get to the good stuff. You were wondering when we would get to that, weren't you? Through the drying process, the boards naturally shrink as moisture leaves the beams. The real shrinkage, however, comes when the rough sawn material is sent to a planer. Follow this closely, Cyrus, which rubs the surface of the wood down into smooth shapes you can purchase at the hardware store. Without the rough edges, what went in as a 2x4 plank of rough sawn wood is now a tongue-tripping 1.5 by 3.5, having lost approximately 1/4 inch on all sides. So it starts off as a 2x4, and then it shrinks. And there you have it. So now at the next cocktail party,
special.
You will be the smartest guy in the room, Cyrus, at the next cocktail party, if the issue of lumber comes up in polite conversation.
Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah. So you'll dazzle.
So you're saying it's kind of like when you get a bag of chips, mm-hmm. and you open it up, but the bag's only like half full. When it was sent, the bag was full, but by the time you get it, it's all settled.
Is that how that works?
I'm trying to draw a comparison between this 2x4 story.
I just think that you're now properly equipped to go to any cocktail party and just dazzle the people with your knowledge of 2x4s. If it comes up.
I'll let you know how that goes.
Yeah. How about that lumber, Cyrus? What can you tell us about the lumber? By the way, and my initial reaction to the story, I know we have a break coming, was what could possibly go wrong? A tiny animal called a rotifer has been revived after spending 24,000 years in frozen permafrost. This is a 24,000-year-old bug, and they revived it. It's alive again. It's alive!
Good idea.
What could possibly go wrong?
These people have never seen a scary movie before.
Yeah, we could make a movie about this. Let's think about that.
There's already about 1,000 of them.
I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show, including some empty calorie information right after this.